A grainy documentary from February 1992 shows Vladimir Putin, St. Petersburg's deputy mayor, projecting calm competence amid the chaos of post-Soviet collapse. He claimed to have resigned from the KGB. The paychecks, however, told a different story. This unassuming bureaucrat would become Russia's longest-serving leader since Stalin, transforming a fragile democracy into what observers now call a mafia state. But here's what makes this story truly chilling. The takeover wasn't improvised. It was rehearsed. While the world celebrated the fall of communism, KGB networks had already stashed billions abroad, cultivated agent networks across Europe, and prepared contingency plans for the day the Soviet Union would collapse. They didn't mourn the USSR's death. They had been planning its resurrection under a new flag all along. Picture KGB officers frantically burning documents in Dresden as the Berlin Wall fell in November 1989. Putin and his colleagues worked day and night until their furnace burst, destroying contact lists and communications until nothing remained but ashes. 12 truckloads of sensitive files were rushed to Moscow. Yet this desperate scramble masked a deeper truth. Parts of the KGB had been preparing for regime collapse for years. By the early 1980s, progressive KGB members developed market-based reforms, a blueprint for KGB capitalism, maintaining control while introducing competition. Operation Lutch, launched in 1988, sent agents to recruit untainted political figures who could survive German reunification. Putin, stationed in Dresden, worked with local communist leaders the KGB hoped to cultivate as successors. Simultaneously, the Stasi moved billions into Western Front companies, with Dresden as a central hub. Putin's main liaison was Herbert Kohler, who created operative firms to hide connections and store black cash for post-collapse operations. Dresden also became a meeting place for Red Army faction terrorists, away from Western intelligence. They arrived by train, met by Stasi agents, and taken to safe houses where Putin and KGB colleagues briefed them. These connections would prove invaluable for building Putin's shadow state infrastructure. Returning to Russia in February 1990, Putin bypassed traditional KGB postings to work with Anatoly Sobchak, the charismatic law professor leading the democratic movement. During the August 1991 coup attempt, Putin proved instrumental in Sobchak's defiant stance, handling dangerous negotiations with hardline troops. "He would change his colors so fast, you could never tell who he really was," observed one German security consultant. St. Petersburg's seaport became ground zero for an alliance between the KGB and organized crime. Investigator Marina Salier uncovered a massive scandal. Putin had distributed over $95 million in export licenses to obscure front companies, with virtually no food arriving in return. Companies received extraordinary commissions of 25 to 50% instead of the standard 3 to 4%. The scheme created hard currency slush funds, essentially an Opshok, a criminal gang's common cash pot where strategic operations and personal use remained deliberately blurred. As Putin consolidated control, he established Ozero, an exclusive dacha community on Lake Komsomolskaya. Former villagers were systematically relocated as high fences cut off lakeshore access. The Ozero members, primarily Bank Rossiya shareholders, represented the blue blood of Putin's KGB connections, bound by personal loyalty rather than merit. This principle would later expand nationwide. When Sobchak lost his 1996 re-election, Putin joined Moscow's Kremlin administration within a month. His ascent was stunning. In 7 months, he became head of the control department, first deputy chief of staff, then FSB director, an unprecedented leap for a lieutenant colonel. As FSB chief, Putin eliminated threats from his St. Petersburg past. Yuri Shutov, who'd gathered compromising material on Putin's organized crime connections, was arrested and died in Russia's toughest penal colony. Human rights activist Galina Starovoitova was murdered 4 months after his appointment. By summer 1999, the Yeltsin regime was crumbling. The 1998 financial crash had devastated Russia's economy and Yeltsin's authority. The Yeltsin family, the president's inner circle, faced mounting corruption investigations. Desperate for protection, they chose Putin as their savior, impressed by his operation helping Sobchak escape arrest. What they didn't know, Putin had worked closely with the very KGB officer behind the leaks damaging the family. He'd masterfully played all sides, deceiving the family while maintaining security service connections. Warfare is based on deception, one associate explained. Putin learned his judo lessons well. The family hadn't fallen to a communist coup. They'd succumbed to a takeover by security men. Putin's May 7, 2000 inauguration marked a sharp break from Yeltsin's democratic rhetoric. While Yeltsin spoke emotionally about freedom, Putin emphasized restoring the Russian state and honoring all its history, signaling a shift away from democratic ideals. In West Siberia's oil basin, Soviet engineers had built an economic powerhouse that made the USSR the world's largest oil and gas producer. When the Soviet Union collapsed, loans for shares auctions transferred these KGB revenue streams to oligarchs like Khodorkovsky, who acquired Yukos for $300 million. By 2002, he had transformed into a transparency advocate, courting Washington and shipping the first Russian oil tanker directly to Texas. These Western ambitions threatened Putin's KGB circle. The breaking point came during Putin's September 2003 U.S. visit, when ExxonMobil CEO announced his intention to buy control of Yukos Sibneft. For Putin's allies, selling strategic reserves to Americans was unthinkable. While Moscow attacked Yukos, obscure transactions quietly unfolded. Shares of Sogaz, a Gazprom insurance company, were sold to companies linked to Bank Rossiya. This unremarkable sale launched a massive wealth transfer, siphoning billions from Gazprom. Bank Rossiya's assets grew 40-fold within 8 years. Through offshore companies spanning Liechtenstein to Panama, funds flowed into Putin's network, increasingly toward personal luxuries like a $1 billion Black Sea palace. While consolidating power at home, Putin expanded influence operations abroad. Roman Abramovich's Chelsea Football Club purchase was a calculated PR coup. According to one insider, Putin personally told me of his plan to acquire the Chelsea Football Club in order to increase his influence and raise Russia's profile, not only with the elite, but with ordinary British people. The purchase also aimed to boost Russia's FIFA clout for the 2018 World Cup bid. Russian influence operations began subtly in Ukraine through heavy Kremlin investment in the Russian Orthodox Church. Among these Orthodox oligarchs was Konstantin Malafeyev, whose investment fund quickly grew to over $1 billion. Unlike George Soros, Malafeyev operated in shadows, advancing Russian Orthodox ideology, preaching tradition over individual rights and subordination to the state. When Trump announced his presidential run in 2015, the Russian network intensified its courtship. Felix Sater, with Russian intelligence contacts, reappeared with Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, on a Moscow tower project. In an October 2015 letter, Sater boasted, "I will get Putin on this program, and we will get Donald elected." When Trump won in 2016, Putin's security men celebrated their victory as revenge for the Soviet collapse. Putin's KGB capitalism has crystallized into a mafia state, where the FSB controls every businessman and politician. Courts, parliament, elections, and oligarchs serve as Kremlin fronts. Property rights exist only through loyalty. Everyone surveils everyone, ministers face imprisonment at whim, and even former insiders remain trapped. One FSB general warned a resistant official, "It would be better if you were tangling with bandits than Putin's state." Putin's January 2020 constitutional changes ensure he can remain president for life. Sergei Pugachev, once the Kremlin's banker who helped install Putin, now lives in exile with deep regret. "We all thought the people weren't ready." Despite fleeing Russia, he admits, "My fate is attached to Putin's." He laments ignoring warnings that appointing someone from the KGB meant entering a vicious circle. What began as a desperate scramble in Dresden has become a global threat to liberal democracy. One empire's fall doesn't guarantee freedom's rise, especially when those who controlled the old system never let go.